Welcome to Through the Pages. We're your hosts, two book-obsessed besties. I'm Mandy.
And I'm Fanny. In this podcast, we read and chat about the classics of literature. Once a month, we discuss a book that people say you should have read and see if it stood the test of time.
Classics don't have to be as daunting as they sound. As we read our way through the ages, we tackle one classic after the other, making them more approachable.
So get comfy, make yourself a cup of tea, listen and read along.
Welcome back to the March episode of Through the Pages pod.
Welcome. We are bringing you, for once, quite an enchanted episode and topic.
It will be indeed, because we read Cinderella by the Brothers Grimm.
Exactly. This might be quite a bit of a juxtaposition from your childhood and what you do know about Cinderella and her story. Because if you've grown up on the very cute, romantic Disney version, we are now bringing you the 19th century German version. And it's just a little bit bloodier and more sinister, which I think we both love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would still love to have an adaptation of these things that are actually true to the text. And speaking of text, we will be discussing the Brothers Grimm version of Cinderella, because as basically all of the fairy tales I think that exist in the world, these have been stories that have been told orally, and the Brothers Grimm took it upon themselves to create a written collection of these stories. And I think these are kind of the stories that we now take as the original version, or the kind of the originals, even though a lot of these stories aren't even necessarily set in Germany or don't come from a German heritage. So just to keep that in mind, we'll be discussing kind of a specific version, but I think that is kind of widely accepted as the version.
Absolutely. And if you do want to first go and read the text that we are discussing here and then listen to the episode, you absolutely can, because it may be, I mean, this time particularly, you all know that we're fans of short, brief novels and stories. This time we topped it, because this story is about 5 pages long.
Yes.
So we made it very easy for ourselves for our March episode. But it also means that if you do want to quickly stop this podcast, go and read the original source text that we're discussing, you can, and then come back and hear what we have to say about him.
Exactly, because they can also be found for free online as like PDFs and stuff. And I was very surprised, to say the least, when I saw that it was 6 pages. I expected something more around the 25-30 page mark. And then I just kind of was, I mean, already from the first page, I thought, oh, this has quite the speed to it. So maybe we can kind of specifically get into the story. Since it is such a short one, I think also, again, spoiler alert, for anything, we will be discussing the story from start to finish.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then at the same time, if you don't know the story of Cinderella, I am asking myself a little bit, like,
yeah, what? Where have you been?
Where have you been?
At least the general idea of Cinderella, I think a lot of people will know about.
Everyone will have a very specific image in their head, and I would argue that it will probably be the Disney version of Cinderella. But yeah, I'm completely with you. I thought it would be a short novella situation, and I mean, looking back, it makes a lot of sense, because you just mentioned that all of these fairy tales were told in a, you know, around the fire, you know, during dinner, maybe in the families. So it makes sense that they would be stories that can be told within an hour or so. If they were even a novella, like, you would be sitting there telling the story for hours on end, which makes sense that they would be very condensed, which I found very interesting, because it does read a bit like a synopsis of the book almost.
Yeah.
It really doesn't go into detail. If anyone wanted to, they could take the story and really elaborate on it, but it makes really big time jumps. It's very descriptive of this happens and then this happens and then this happens.
It's kind of like the outline an author would maybe write before actually getting to write the book, which is quite interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important that you mentioned that we're discussing the Brothers Grimm version, of the story that was published in 1812 or 1815, they did publish two separate texts of what was called kids, children's and household fairy tales, in which you will find all of your usual fairy tales in terms of Hansel and Gretel, Red Riding Hood, Snow White, a gazillion other ones I'm now forgetting on the spot. But having had a look quickly at the origin of the Cinderella story with some differences or different aspects, it did originate in Naples, I think, Italy.
Yeah, which I think I'm still quite interested to read that original version because it...
You could read it in source text, original language.
So I can report back how that was if I ever get to it.
Let's get into the story.
Yes. So,
over to you.
So it is a very kind of classic setup, as you know, from fairy tales. So we kind of start the whole story with a mother, a father, and a little girl that hasn't got a name yet.
She's the maiden.
She's the maiden, yeah.
Could be you, could be me, could be anyone.
Could be anyone. So this story is about all of us.
This could also happen to you at home.
Exactly. That was probably what they were told, to be fair.
Probably.
And so basically the mom dies, as they always do in fairy tales. And then the dad remarries an evil, evil woman. With two, I would argue, even more evil daughters. So this poor little maiden now has a horrible stepmother and two horrible stepdaughters. Not stepdaughters, stepsisters. Mm. And I mean, obviously the evil stepmother had to be in there somewhere. The whole like stepmother rep in fairy tales is awful.
They always are. They're always stepmothers. They're always awful.
Yes.
And I think we can talk about the image of women characters in general in fairy tales because we have to.
Yeah.
We have to get into it. But back to the story.
And so basically, this girl that now suddenly is called Cinderella because basically she has become the servant of the house. So she now has to clean everything. And her stepsisters basically keep throwing her peas and lentils into the ashes to pick them out again. So obviously Cinder, Ash, Cinderella, she is now this Cinderella girl.
She's a Cinder person now. But yeah, she's really moved to a position of servant for the family. Someone that I was even more upset with in the story, more so than the stepmother, was her dad.
Oh yeah.
Because he's her biological dad and he just completely throws her under the bus. He's like, I've got this new family now. My OG daughter is my servant. She doesn't even have a bed. I'm going to let her sleep in the ashes.
Yeah.
She's always a bit dirty. Boo-hoo.
Yeah, I didn't even give her a name in the first
place. She's the maiden. I can't recall what she's called.
Yeah, like just awful, awful. I mean, we see the stepmother is evil because she's kind of the one actively bullying her. But the dad is just completely like
oblivious to her existence.
And doesn't care. And so basically kind of the whole story gets kicked off by the dad who has to go on some travels. And because that is quite unusual, he asks all of his daughters what he can bring back for them. And the two stepsisters kind of say, oh yeah, jewelry or new clothing, kind of the riches and materialistic things. And he even bothers asking his own daughter,
which is slash crazy.
Maiden.
He remembered that she existed, which is good for him.
And strangely enough for her, basically what she asks for is to bring him the first thing that hits his hat upon return. So a very open present, a very non-specific thing, because is it a raindrop? Is it a frog?
Is it a dead pigeon?
Could be anything. I mean, in like the 1800s, could have literally been the plague.
I have been hit on my head by the plague. I shall bring it back home for my youngest daughter, who's already
who's already in the ashes. He probably would have done that, to be honest. So he goes and then he comes back, and this is also basically how the story is told, because it's so non-descriptive. It's like he went and then he came back.
It is quick paced.
Yes.
It will be the father went, he brought back riches for his two stepdaughters, and something that did hit his head or his hat.
How coincidental as well.
It did, of course.
Yeah.
Was a hazel branch.
Yeah. Also very...
Or the branch of a hazel tree.
Yes.
Pardon.
Yeah. Also very specific again. Or like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he was traveling or how low that branch was.
On carriage, obviously.
Yeah. So how was it able to like hit his head? Oh, an open carriage.
It would have been an open carriage. I can imagine him next to the carriage person with the hair, you know? And then he will... probably knocked off his top hat and he would have been like, oh, I do remember, she called the maiden, she said something about hitting my hat, I'm just gonna break off that branch. But as we'll find out later, probably some magical elements had their hands in the game as well with this hazel branch, because he does bring this branch back to Cinderella, who is surprisingly happy about it, which I don't fully understand. I mean, if I had to live in the ashes with a dirty dress, I would have probably asked her for A, a bed, or B, a clean dress.
Yeah, yeah.
But what also has to be mentioned at this point is, clearly we know the stepdaughters or the stepsisters are evil. In juxtaposition, Cinderella is good.
The best.
She's the bestest of them all.
She's the most virtuous.
She's virtuous. She's pious. That's how she's described. She is just a good egg all round. She doesn't complain.
Yeah.
You wake up with ashes on your head. That's just your life. You just continue being virtuous and pious.
As a good woman, you don't complain.
You never complain. Yeah. Don't draw attention to yourself.
Rule number one.
That's what we teach kids with these fairy tales.
Exactly.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But she accepts this hazel branch happily and decides to plant it on her mother's tree. No, her mother's grave.
Her mother's grave, yeah.
The little branch then grows into a wonderful tree, sort of probably enforced by the magical ground of Cinderella's mother decomposing.
That is the true magic, is what this tree was fertilized
very, very
with.
Very fertile ground. Plus, also, as described in the story, are we very cynical in this retelling? I feel like we're not super... My childhood self would be appalled. Cinderella also cries on this grave. So with her teardrops, the ground is further fertilized, you know, photosynthesis.
Yeah, so that out of this one branch grows... an entire tree in very little time. Again, the time frame of these, like, I mean, technically 10 years could have passed. I imagined her at the beginning of the story to be like
15,
and then at the end of it like 30, but I think at the beginning she was probably 5 and by the end of it 15. So this tree grows. We don't know in kind of the velocity of the growth.
I mean, it's clearly a magical tree.
Yeah.
So it could have been anything. Maybe she's also just a really good gardener.
Yeah, got that green thumb going for her.
It's like, I don't have anything going for myself, but I do know how to grow a tree.
Yes.
Up comes the next sort of big event of the story.
Yes.
Namely that... the king, at which point we learn that, of course, since we're reading a fairy tale, or we're listening to a fairy tale, we find ourselves in a kingdom, has organized a huge fete, festival, as it is described in the English version.
A three-day festival. A proper party.
A party with a capital P. And he has, of course, invited all in the land.
Yes.
Everyone in Cinderella's household is extremely looking forward to that. Everyone is up in hysterics, I'd say. And Cinderella, of course, would like to go as well. But the stepmother is very clear in saying, absolutely not.
Exactly. And then Cinderella is like, oh, please, please, please. And the stepmom basically... throws her some more lentils, peas, whatever, legumes into the ashes. And
also, my main question here is, A, do they only eat bean legume stuff? In which case, where do they take any of their other vitamins from? B, surely this is food that you will then later be eating. Why throw it into the dirt?
Yeah, that I also didn't quite get the logistics of, like, is she throwing the cooked stuff in the ashes, or is it the dry ones that have to be cooked later on?
It's definitely the dry one that has to be cooked later on.
Yeah, then it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh yeah, you just, A, has postponed your own dinner now because she will have to pick them out, and B, your dinner is going to be full of ash. So it's like lose-lose.
It's a potato-potato kind of situation.
Yes, but bullying apparently has no bounds in this story, so...
There's no rules for bullying. You can be as creative as you want to be.
And so basically she kind of throws these lentils, peas into the ashes, that is kind of as per usual, but with a twist this time. She says if you can manage to, like, clean them all out in, what was it, like half an hour or 1 hour, you're allowed to go. And then Cinderella summons her little friends.
Because seeing that Cinderella has such a natural touch with nature, seeing as she's grown this tree in 3.0 seconds... like this is something that is definitely taken up in the Disney version as well.
Yes.
Like she has little mice that talk to her, there's birds as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely rooted in the original version because she decides to summon help in the form of two pigeons.
Yes.
Take it away.
I'm gonna read a little excerpt here. Well, it's just a little rhyme. Let's not blow this up.
Can you do it in a poetry slam kind of rhythm?
I'm gonna read it as a haiku. No, she basically says, the maiden went through the back door into the garden and called. You tame pigeons, you turtle doves, and all you birds beneath the sky, come and help me to pick the good into the pot, the bad into the crop. And so they do. Two white pigeons come by the kitchen windows, and then also the turtle doves come, and at last all the birds beneath the sky. So basically that's how The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock was invented.
I was just going to say the same thing. That is where Hitchcock actually got his original inspiration.
Probably. I mean, imagine a room full of birds. There is nothing worse than like a panicked bird indoors. Then you have them all in your kitchen.
But plot twist, they do help Cinderella. Obviously,
yes.
In a very short time, they will have picked the good from the bad. Everything's cleaned up. Cinderella is through the roof happy and goes to tell her stepmother, who of course is like... Have you had help by birds, by winged animals?
Came around.
And of course, here again, we have this very typical fairy tale pattern, I want to say, which means that the stepmother gives her the same task again, but with less time. And then she, since seeing that the birds are still helping Cinderella, she does it a third time. So we have a lot of threes in this story. So Cinderella, then she has to do it in an hour, then half an hour, then I don't know, 15 minutes. I don't remember the exact timing that the stepmother gave her. But she always manages to complete the task with the help of her bird friends. And ultimately the stepmother is just like, well, but you can't come anyway.
Yeah, because you don't have a dress.
And it's you don't have a dress.
Okay, that would have been just the answer from the get-go.
Yeah.
Not sure why you...
Why are you torturing us all with this three times? I've heard this little pigeon song three times now.
No need for a fourth.
No need for the repetition. The family goes to the three-day festival. And Cinderella, unhappily, goes to the grave of her mother and her little slash now big hazel tree.
Exactly. And there she kind of cries for a bit and then...
As you do.
And then asks the tree basically to kind of rain silver and gold down on her. And the tree obliges and gifts her a beautiful dress with beautiful slippers so that Cinderella can go to the ball, which she does. And as you may or may not have guessed, the prince sees her from afar, clocks eyes with hers, is all enchanted by this beautiful maiden that he has never seen before in his entire life. Nobody recognizes her.
And... But she does smell oddly like beans.
Yeah, there is a certain like
legume smell
going on. Not sure if that would have been so appealing. And then he dances with her for the whole, like, night or whatever. And then suddenly she's like, oh, gotta go, and runs away. And also, kind of differently to the Disney version, there is no midnight curfew. There is no time by which she has to be back. She just runs away and basically, like, climbs into a pigeon house or a bird house. Mm-hmm. And then the prince, very... again, coincidentally, goes to her dad and is like, oh, this beautiful maiden just ran away and climbed into this birdhouse. Go see who this is. And the dad is like, could this be my daughter?
I love that he has completely forgotten about her existence. He also doesn't recognize her when with the same face, but in a different dress. But then when a maiden does something quite surprisingly strange, he's like, could this be my flesh and blood?
Yeah.
Probably is. And one big difference as well, not having this midnight deadline in the story, is that there is no fairy godmother.
Yeah.
There is no pumpkin carriage.
I was quite disappointed. I was quite, because I think the pumpkin carriage, I do
is
connect
iconic.
That, is very iconic.
It's iconic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, 19th century storytelling was not, they were not so far yet to produce a...
No, such an enchanted little thing.
But so we could argue that seeing that the hazel tree was planted on Cinderella's mother's grave, that probably there is a magical touch with it, thinking that her mother might be sort of the fairy godmother helping her from the land of the dead.
Yeah. And... so basically, again, based on the rule of threes, this whole thing kind of repeats like three times. So she goes again, says, oh yeah, rain down on me, a second dress and slippers are produced. And then before the third night of the ball, the prince, who now has had this beautiful maiden go through his fingers twice, had a brilliant idea. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. He was like, oh, why don't I just... coat the stairs in glue so that when the maiden runs away, she gets stuck and can't leave.
This is also another example of how fairy tales really help us as children, thinking, oh, here are two grown-ups, rather than saying, hello, maiden, I really enjoy your company. May you tell me who you are? Who are you? What kind of person are you? He's like, I'm a catcher.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a catcher.
Like an animal.
Someone bring me super glue.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it on the stairs and then I'll catch her.
Yeah, like you catch a fly. You know, on these like sticky like bands that you can hang up. It's like, does she deserve that, dear prince?
It is the least romantic act ever.
Yeah.
But we also at this point have to say that the characters, apart from learning that Cinderella is virtuous and pious, the stepmother and stepdaughters are purely evil and the dad is sort of a little bit dumb and indifferent. We don't really learn anything more about these characters. They are very one-dimensional. And something that I found quite difficult to read of the prince was that while he was dancing with her and completely transfixed with Cinderella, which is wonderful, anytime another man came along and was also transfixed by Cinderella, he would say, no, she is my partner. Which is just giving me a tad of... toxicity, if you know what I
mean. Also considering that A, you don't even know who it is. B, you literally want to stick like her with glue onto your
castle. I thought you were
going
to say you want to stick something. I thought it was going to go into a dock.
That probably also isn't specified, but I wouldn't...
wouldn't put it past him.
And yeah, so he kind of already sees her as his possession. Very problematic.
Also difficult because, again, this is something that... kids would have heard.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like boy and girl, no, she is his, but not vice versa.
And he also doesn't really take the time or interest to get to know her, clearly. Mm-hmm. He's just the rhythm of three is repeated,
yep.
And then he is determined to catch her. But of course, as we know, the iconic slipper gets stuck on the super glue, but
yes.
Cinderella doesn't. So she gets away, and not a glass slipper, but a golden slipper.
True, yes.
In the original story.
A lot more fabulous.
That's where he goes. He goes... he goes, I now have this slipper. I can find the woman it belongs to because it's small and dainty. So if you have big feet that look like a hobbit, you're not worthy of love.
Yeah. So that is basically when Bigfoot starts crying. We quickly zoom onto his little cave, and he's like one single tear down his cheeks.
Like, am I not worthy of love? And he goes, no, because you shall never fit into this golden slipper.
So also, again, similarly kind of to what we know, the prince takes it upon himself to find this maiden based on a shoe, because of course shoe sizes aren't very like generalized and isn't like a fingerprint. Clearly, he doesn't know.
Clearly the hazel tree has produced the bespoke slipper though.
Yeah.
So it will only apparently fit Cinderella's foot. Prince is on a quest to find his bride, his maiden, and of course coincidentally also starts with Cinderella's family, and the father goes, yeah, of course I have two daughters. So the first stepdaughter tries on the slipper, but her toe is too big.
Big ass toe.
Like hobbit. It's just,
yeah.
And this is where the story takes a slight detour from our very nice magical Disney version, because the stepmother, who apparently has a knife ready, goes, well, just cut off your toe so you'll fit into the slipper.
And she also nicely adds, because if you can't walk anymore and you're the queen, you won't have to walk anymore anyways. So very practical thinking there.
And the
mother.
Stepdaughter goes, yeah, I guess that makes sense. She cuts off her toe, fits in her little bloody foot into the shoe, and the prince goes, slipper fits, she must be the one.
Yes. And then
rides off into the sunset with her on his little horse.
Yes. And they ride past, again, lots of coincidences, they ride past the hazel tree. So I don't know why they went horseback riding in a graveyard, but that's a whole other story.
That's just details.
They ride past the two pigeons, little snitches, and they kind of coo, and for logistical reasons, I can't read the poem anymore now. They basically say, cuckoo, cuckoo, this bride is not for you.
Because look at the shoe, it's bleeding.
Yes.
There's blood in the shoe.
And basically the prince stops his horse, looks at the shoe, sees that it is
filled
with blood to the brim. And he's like, okay, Bigfoot, no way. You tried to deceive me. Off you go.
And the pigeon also go, there's blood in the shoe. Your true bride is still
waits
at home.
For you. Yeah. Yeah.
So he turns around. He's like, well, if it's not sister A, it must be sister B. Seeing that I didn't see this woman for 3 days in a row and danced with her intensely, I have no recollection of her face. So it must be the other sister. And he goes to sister number two, tries on the slipper, but her heel is too big. So you can take a sort of just random guess what happens next.
Yeah, when mom waits with her handy little knife around the corner, is like, chop off your heel, chop it off.
Because if you're queen, you don't have to walk anymore, so
exactly.
You don't need a heel.
Yeah.
So the stepdaughter goes, yeah, I'm gonna cut off my heel. Does the same thing.
Also, I think, wouldn't it be a lot easier to cut off a toe than your actual heel?
Definitely.
Can you even cut off your heel?
I don't think so.
Because it sounds very, like, I mean, the toe, it's not as if any of this is practical, but a toe is very easily removed,
also,
I would say.
I'm also just thinking, how large was that toe?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I would like to, this is where I would have loved the fairy tale to elaborate a little bit, because I was like, how large was that
toe?
Yeah,
like,
how big was
that
heel?
Large, or how small are Cinderella's feet?
Clearly she has 4-year-old child dainty feet.
Which probably she does, because in the story she's probably like 12.
Which is a whole other story, yeah. Which is why everything is a bit problematic. But the prince, obviously seeing that the foot is in the shoe, is like, deal closed. I've got my bride. Riding off with her into the sunset, but they didn't take the two pigeons into consideration.
He rides past the pigeons again, cuckoo, this bride is not for you.
There's blood in the shoe, because we love to rhyme.
And then again, he looks at the shoe, he sees the heel, like he sees the shoe full of blood.
I think that it's said, and it, like, it's written in a way that it's like, oh, there was blood trickling out of the shoe, which has made me go like,
ugh. Yeah, so gross. Also, as if like he wouldn't have seen the flesh wound before hopping on a horse with her.
I mean, seeing that he wanted to super glue Cinderella to keep her, I feel like I don't really want to discuss his cleverness. Yeah,
not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Definitely.
No, not the brightest of the bunch.
He's definitely not as sharp as that mother's knife that chopped off her daughter's feet.
That's where my mom would say he wouldn't be bright even if you put his hair on fire.
Still the best.
Definitely applies to the prince.
And so basically the prince again goes back, goes to the dad and says, didn't you have a third one? And the dad's like, what are you talking about? Oh, you mean that one?
You mean the dirty wench in the ashes? I am purely disgusted by her.
And the prince insists to make the little ashen wench try the little glass slipper on.
No, golden slipper. Golden apology. Slipper,
true. And lo and behold, the slipper fits.
Like a glove. But a shoe.
And then he looks at her and recognizes her immediately, which again, either he has some sort of like foot fetish going on and he's like, if I don't recognize the foot, I don't recognize you as a person. Or because this is the one thing that even for fairy tale standards makes very little sense. Also because that festival, it wasn't like a masquerade ball. She wasn't walking around with like a pest doctor mask. And he was like, oh,
who's that? Even though that bring back the play.
Exactly. So he's like, oh, that is an interesting looking woman. She literally was there with her face. And so I don't know why they didn't just make it like a masked ball. It would have made you know the Cinderella story with Hilary Duff?
Of course I do.
Like, even there, ridiculous, of course. But at least she was wearing some sort of, like, facial obstruction.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I never thought about it, but it makes a lot of sense that he does have a slight foot fetish.
Yeah, because it's just too much, like, shoe trying on. I'm sure there were other ways to find out who she was.
Maybe his true calling was owning a shoe shop.
Yeah, maybe he
wanted...
But
then he had to be a prince, which is so lame.
Yeah.
But so he locks eyes with Cinderella. He does recognize her as his beautiful maiden that he met at the festival. And he does ride off with her. And the pigeons go... A-okay, our invisible thumbs are up. They ride into the kingdom sunset together, but this is not where the story ends. No. It does have a little morale twist to it, as it should have.
Like kind of after credits. When you think the credits are rolling and then...
If this was a Marvel film, they would roll the credits and this would be the sort of the one that everyone waits for. As a little clue what happens to the other characters.
And that would then be kind of for a spin-off, a villain origin story of the two stepsisters.
What happens is that obviously the two sisters being as awful as they are, they then want to win Cinderella over, sort of going, well, we have been horrible to you, but seeing that you're the queen now and you're rich, can you give us riches and dresses? And she goes, yeah, sure, just walk down this path. And they happily go along the path and the two pigeons have their moment. They will go and land on the shoulders of the stepsisters and they peck out an eye.
And then Cinderella's like, okay, now swap sides, walk down the other way, and then the pigeons peck out the other eye.
And the last sentence of the story is, because if you're evil, you'll go blind.
The end. So no happily ever after. It's like, no, I'm not happy until...
Happily ever blind.
Yes, the ones that have done me wrong have suffered. So... I don't know, it was a very much quite like the vengeance ending that I didn't expect, but we deserved.
I did expect something in that direction because it is a 19th century German story, so why would there be glitter and fairy dust? But I was expecting there to be a different ending because, I mean, I was paraphrasing the last sentence here, but basically it did say because that those who had it coming will now eternally have to live with blindness. But I thought there would be at least another paragraph saying, and if they've not died yet, like, because in the German happily ever after it says, and if they haven't died yet, they're still happily living together.
Yes.
There was nothing like that. It really ended on the blindness note, which I think really hits the morale home of if you're pious. So what is the morale of the story, Mandy?
You have to be pious, you have to not complain, and then you have to be good at gardening, and you have to not actively pursue the man.
Yes.
You have to be in the shadows of those who are above you and make friends with bards.
You have to endure hardship without complaining.
Yes.
Ideally, you should have very small, dainty feet.
Yes.
Probably also not take up too much space physically because...
Generally,
because
yeah, true.
You. And then good things will come to yeah. you in the end. However, if you are a bully, which I have to... Yeah, please don't bully people. But also if you're a slightly materialistic, as in you would like to have a new dress, ew.
Yeah.
And you would like to have a life without hardship, you will get blinded
yeah.
in the end.
And also if you want to kind of actively pursue the prince and don't want to just be the one that is being pursued, like, yeah, just kind of don't have agency.
Yeah.
Just be quiet.
Agency will mean that you are physically impaired.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
on your foot or your eyesight.
Yes. You will have something in the end. Agency equals blindness.
The yeah.
Also blindness by bard. Not just any kind of blindness. No, because formerly they... don't even have their eyeballs anymore.
Yeah, which I think anything with eyes also, I think this really scared me because anything with eyes and so on, like that really, yeah. I find that very gruesome. So let's discuss quite a bit of a different version from the one that probably we also grew up
yes.
with watching Cinderella and having that. I always imagine her with that like sort of blonde hair, her little, what do you call that little...
the headband.
The
yeah.
headband and her blue sparkly dress made... by the fairy godmother. Also there, the prince is not really the sharpest knife in the drawer, but still it's that sort of romantic
yes.
element to it. They fall in love. Interestingly, in this story, no romance at all.
No, that is complete. Like the prince technically has zero importance in this whole thing. I mean, the only importance that he holds is the fact that he then brings her away and now she can be the princess and the queen later on, blah, blah. But there is the actual build-up isn't... is there, but then the whole like prince thing, I mean, I don't even think Cinderella mentions wanting to be married to the prince once.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
She's literally just, all she wants is a dress and to be at the festival.
Yeah,
that is
yeah.
the only agency that she does do is that she's like, I'm going to go anyway, even though they say like can't
yes.
go.
She just wants to have a good time.
Yeah. She wants to have a little change from her humdrum ashen life.
Yes. A little bit of laudanum in a little opium den. Just have a good time.
In the kingdom.
Yeah.
And also at no point the prince goes, oh, and he was transfixed and he fell in love with her.
No.
Instantly, it was love at first sight. The word love never falls.
True.
It's all, oh, she's my partner.
Yes.
That sort of very possessive yeah. element that you mentioned before. And the only incentive for Cinderella to be with him... And also there's never a discussion, like, the shoe fits, so she will be his bride. She has no say
oh, yeah.
on the matter at all. And the only incentive, I mean, I was happy for Cinderella in that moment, but knowing that she will have A, a bed, and B, will not have to be sleeping in ash anymore. In terms of having to spend her life with the very clearly sort of Dumbo prince, not so much.
Not the best. And what I also think is very interesting and kind of... just the general pattern in these fairy tales and including the Disney films is that as soon as a woman has like, it doesn't even necessarily have to have agency, but as soon as a woman is active in doing something, she's a villain.
Oh, absolutely.
So like, I don't know, Snow White is just kind of there. And then the evil stepmother, I mean, again, the stepmother rep is awful. It's just so sad. Like for all of the wonderful stepmoms out there that, you know, kind of take mm-hmm. on existing children as their own in a family. They're just in fairy tales in general, the stepmom is just awful. And I think that trope also has kind of gone through a lot of different stories as well mm-hmm. outside of fairy tales, which I find very sad. And then, I mean, also, why wasn't it a stepfather with stepbrothers? Why, you know, like these things, why isn't it the evil dad? And then the father, similarly also in Snow White, just has like no say. But also doesn't care about mm-hmm. her or his own child, which is also very sad. So yeah, I think the female role is always connected to something very negative, very evil. I would say same thing with the fairy in what's it called, the Sleeping Beauty, mm-hmm. Like the 13th godmother that wasn't invited, fairy godmother, whatever they're called, that wasn't invited. So it's always an evil woman that brings evil. So the whole kind of like witch trope, mm-hmm. again, which I find very problematic, because yeah, it just kind of gives you this idea that you have to be a perfectly compliant, quiet, small, be it physically in like the space you take up, mm-hmm. woman, otherwise you're an old hag that deserves to either suffer or die.
I mean, at this point, like, we would have not made it far.
Oh, no,
in the world,
no,
of fairy tales.
No, I would have been a hag in there.
I was born a hag.
I was born a hag. Proud hag.
But yeah, I really struggle with these female archetypes. Mm-hmm. Either you are the perfect goody two-shoes, you are just inherently evil.
Yeah.
Or you're old and gross.
Yes.
This is what you can pick. And in all of the roles, you will suffer. And I mean, what I think is really interesting to see nowadays that we've moved along a little bit from these original fairy tales, and there's been a lot of spin-offs and, you know, twists on the stories, having the focus more on these female villains, you mm-hmm. know, that are just evil and frustrated and making other people's lives hell for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Because also here, there could have been so much elaboration. I was really interested in the stepmother and the stepsister, because I was like, yeah. why are they so evil? They were way more interesting than Cinderella.
Yes.
She was boring. We all know that she's going to get her happy end, whatever that means. Like living happily ever after with someone who doesn't even recognize her face, but still,
yeah,
she's materialistically secured,
yeah,
in her life. But I really wanted to know what happened to those three women, that mother and her daughters, that they were so upset and angry and bullies. And that's really the interesting story.
Yeah, I think the whole kind of villain origin story, yeah. completely missed, like, it's just non-existent in all of them. And I think there have been quite a few books that have kind of come out recently, or like kind of in the wake of the whole fairy tale retelling, where yeah. some of the villain origin stories came out. Actually, I don't know if you know that booktuber, she's called Leonie. She's a Dutch girl, if I'm not mistaken. It's called The Book Leo on YouTube.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I really like her videos, and she always makes these kind of like video essays about certain topics, which are always really nice. And she recently made one about fairy tale retellings.
Oh, fun.
That was really interesting, and did like a whole, like, on her wall, a whole map of when what came out and stuff. And also a bunch of things I had no idea even existed. And there were a lot of like villain origin stories that I thought was quite interesting. And I don't think there was any about the evil stepmother there, but that would be a very cool story to read.
So if anyone wants to take this very limited source text and yeah. make it into their own, go for it.
Because you can run with it in any direction, even like a modern retelling, just
100%. Yeah. You could set it in any setting, time period.
Yes.
And really also knowing the story from the other side, the villain's
yeah.
story, is way more interesting.
And yeah, because there is motive behind it. There is a whole story and reason. I mean, we don't know anything about Cinderella, and she doesn't do anything in the whole story except for get dresses from a magical hazel tree, which, yeah, is just a bit boring.
The thing is just, I'm also reading this story now, and I feel like in my own head, I really elaborated this shorter text with the other tellings of the story, like a story like Disney version, for example. But I just feel like the story really is a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
It's not storytelling as in we want to know about Cinderella, we want to know what happens. It's not a character study. It really is to drive home that main morale,
yes.
of the story, of this is good, this is bad, yes. this is what happens if you do something bad.
Yes.
Which ultimately, I completely understand. That's why fairy tales are yeah. there. And that's why they're also told to kids. And it makes so much sense that in fairy tales, people are either good or bad. It's this very black and white situation,
yeah.
because kids don't understand grey zone
mm-hmm.
situations or characters. And that is where, in adult retellings, it's way more interesting, or modern retellings, because you can really play with these characters
yeah.
and give them a backstory. But still, I mean, even knowing that probably in the 19th century, kids had a rougher life than they would have yes. today.
And maybe some of these stories are even older Definitely. Than this. So I guess it makes sense. Like, also, I mean, the
gruesome aspect of it probably yeah. wouldn't have been as much of a shock. I mean, if my mom or my dad had told me this original story when I was 6 years old, I would have dreamt of birds picking out yeah. people's eyes for the rest of my life.
I mean, I was traumatized by Dumbo. So
what traumatized you about Dumbo?
When he got separated from his mom and oh. then they like kiss each other with their trunks, like through the cage. That ruined me as a child. So let alone knowing something of this nature. Yeah. Or having the mom's grave there. Like these very... Even though they did kill off Bambi, but that's a whole other which bone left, to pick.
Which left a whole generation of kids traumatized.
Yes.
But yeah, this... I mean, this story is very, very rough.
Yeah.
Seeing that it was sold as a kids and household fairy tale collection. Yeah. But yeah, probably we do have to see it in the historical context of stories and life just being a lot more harsh yeah. and rough.
And also, I mean, women's position in these times, obviously, if we look at this now, I don't think it would be a responsible thing to do to tell this story to a child without some sort of context or at all to a child, to be honest. I think these are very interesting to revisit as an adult now.
Absolutely.
And for that, actually, all of the... fairy tales, because they're so short, you can kind of go through them. I still kind of like I'm somewhat lacking the point of it. I mean, I get like the overall morale, but I feel like it's told in such strange stories that I don't know if a child would even like fully get what it should take away from it, because it's very confusing. Like all of the so I think that Little Red Riding Hood might be the most kind of obvious one, also Hansel and Gretel, also with like, I don't know, Stranger Danger and kind of these other topics around.
Don't accept sweets from a stranger.
Exactly.
Don't eat the house, even if it's made out of gingerbread.
Oh, damn it. But even like Snow White or the Sleeping Beauty, like it's just an evil person, or like in that case, again, an evil woman that wants to do harm to a girl who is younger and prettier than her. And... like, what should a child take away from this?
So, Sleeping Beauty will be, if you're beautiful, waiting makes the heart grow fonder. If you are kissed unconsensually, you will have found your prince.
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
Also, just to put a big thing, like, this is meant in a very ironic yes. way.
I hope yeah. that gets across.
Actually,
yeah.
because I read a couple of other fairy tales, because as you said, yeah. they're so short. And actually, the one that I found quite interesting was Hansel and Gretel, because I didn't really know... I mean, I knew the overall story, but not the details.
I think that was the only one that my mom actively told me.
Yeah, but I can imagine why, because in the story, Hansel gets... trapped by the evil witch again. We've mm-hmm. got the evil witch who's like, I'm gonna eat your kids. You know, I'm just gonna yeah. fatten you up until I can eat you. And Gretel is the one out and not put away and locked away. And she helps the witch. And she is then ultimately the one that pushes the witch into the oven and closes the door and then goes to save her brother.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a rescue situation where the girl does have a lot of agency. And probably that's why your mom yeah. was like, okay, I can tell her that story, because it's female empowerment, because ultimately yeah. she's the one who saved them
True.
All. And Hansel and Gretel is way more of a, even if you're left to your own devices, like you can make it, just rely on your own cleverness. Also yeah. don't trust strangers.
Yeah, just yeah, don't. But yeah, that is true. That's quite it does kind of fall a bit out of this line of just kind of complacent girls who stuff happens to. And yeah, I mean, the evil woman is still in there, but I guess.
Yeah, and also always very gullible girls, you know, in Snow yeah. White as well, where she accepts the apple and it's a perfect apple. And you're like, well, this witch has just sold you an apple. Do you really want to? Oh, you already bit it. Yep. Okay, never mind. Yeah. It's this very naive, gullible, but purely, purely good. Very pure as well in yeah. mind and soul and body. Tra-ra, tra-ra.
Yeah.
It is just very boring if we look at it from
They are extremely boring stories. I think, again, in that video of the book Leo, she mentioned a book that was about the Snow White and the Huntsman, but then like they fall in love, or like they are rivals and then they want to kill each other, you know, and like the whole enemies to lovers takes it too far. No.
I really don't enjoy these retellings. But I mean, something that we have to say, probably the stories, even though we just said that, can't be that boring because they've lived through time and time and time. Yeah. There is something about these stories, probably the simplicity of it, the repetition, these very clear characters that we can immediately recognize. I mean, if anyone says, oh, I'm a stepmother, my first association is probably with, oh, she's an evil person. Yeah. As detrimental as that might be for sort of the image of women in storytelling and stories. But still, it's these very easily identifiable characters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ultimately, there is always a lot of plot. I mean, this story is just plot. It's not character.
Yeah, true.
It's just stuff happening. And I guess that makes a lot of sense to keep people captivated. It's just like stuff happening and people are either good or bad. And then this happens and one event following the other one. And ultimately it's about life and death and not really love, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that the love aspect has definitely come out a lot more in the Disney versions. I think Walt Disney just romanticized them and has given them kind of a new life.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't argue a better one. I feel like the more gruesome tales would have, like, it's not that they're better, but I feel like they're kind of more easily to take with a kind of a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Whereas the romanticized versions of them have then given like little girls a whole other image of what a princess mm-hmm. should be like, etc. That I think they're kind of mending now with like the more latest princesses or main characters that have come out that are a lot stronger in what they do. And there isn't this whole love story attached to it. Having said that, I'm by no means like a Disney expert. I have seen Dumbo and the Robin Hood with the fox, and that's it.
After you were traumatized by Dumbo,
yeah.
You didn't.
Because I know my mom didn't show them to me on purpose.
Because
she didn't want
me. I mean, she had
an agenda.
Definitely.
So she only showed me the ones with like animal representation. So there was Dumbo, the Robin Hood fox, that I think the female like love interest is also quite like a feisty female fox. Oliver and Co. That is basically Oliver Twist, but with cats and dogs. Grand. But none of the princess things. But I have seen Snow White then at a later point, just because I feel like it's still part of the... the artistry behind it is amazing. But it is just quite wrong, so to speak. And I feel like if a girl with like 6-7 years old has seen that, it's quite... Yeah, it just gives you a bit of a wrong-ish image of what exactly you should tell
and should portray girls to be lovable and loved.
Yeah,
and that is not something that the Disney version has taken away, which definitely Disney are now mending, you know, like with different representation of strong female characters that have their own mind and they speak their own mind, which is brilliant. I would love to have an adaptation of this original gruesome version, but with a bit of a feminist twist.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm not against the whole blood and brutality of it. Is it awful that I say I quite enjoyed reading this?
No, I think it's HBO could do like just one fairy tale per episode, even in like super short condensed ones as the books are, just like 8 of them.
Also produced by... Who's he called? What's he called? Guillermo de Torres?
Oh, Guillermo del Toro.
Del
yes,
Toro.
Yes, yes, yes. That one.
Apologies.
Oh, yeah, that would be a very interesting
like
mix.
A death cabinet of fairy tales.
Yes.
That could be super fun.
Because I just remember one adaptation that then, strangely enough, my mom did let me watch of Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it was a German... it was some sort of German adaptation. Had to be, because it had the whole part of the queen at the very end who has to like dance in I think they put her shoes in fire and then put them on her feet, and then she has to dance until her like feet melt together with the shoes, and then it's like a whole ordeal. So I saw an adaptation of that, and I remember I was like, oh, this is like quite intense, but also, oh, interesting.
Interesting that your mom would have let you watch that.
Yeah, but not the 1920s version. No.
I love, though, that, again, the moral of that story is if you're jealous of someone else's beauty, you will have to dance with your feet on fire.
Yeah.
It's always the feet that are somehow impaired. Either they're bloody or burning or...
It's strange. I don't know what the obsession with shoes is. Yeah. Maybe you guys know.
Let us know what you think. Let us know. Do you have a favorite fairy tale? Do you also see the problematic aspects of them?
Do you think they're completely fine stories to be told? Because in the end,
it's still
a story. I mean, that has also to be said. No story has to have a lesson, a morale. You can just enjoy.
But these cute stories definitely.
Oh yeah, they do.
These stories come with an agenda too, like your mom. Yeah, like they will. They're on a mission. And also, again, you know, interesting that the two Grimm brothers decided to put this collection together. Again, it's two old dudes.
Yeah.
That were like, let's put a fairy tale together of how kids will see the world and also see women.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you seen this, the film, like the Brothers Grimm, I think with Heath Ledger?
Is he one of the brothers?
Yeah.
I pictured him as old and gross.
Yeah, I pictured him like Heath Ledger. So,
oh, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind that. Yeah.
So it was a bit more of a pleasant image in my head.
No, because I looked at their paintings online and they're just two old haggard men.
Yeah, so they just wanted these stories to live on. Shall we thank them or not? We'll let you decide.
I mean, I guess thank them because a lot of other stories, I would argue, have come out of this source material.
100%.
And they have lived on for a reason. Let us know why you think we are still so obsessed with fairy tales.
Yeah. And yeah, let us know what you think. Do have a read or a peruse in the whole Grimm's collection. As we said, they're super short. And yeah, let us know which one your favorite is. If you have read one, seen one, heard about one. And we will hear you next month.
In the meantime, you can also already go and vote for our upcoming April book, for our April episode. As always, we will let you pick which one we should read. We're giving you two options. And it's going to go from sort of enchanted to more dystopian. Because we are giving you the choice between either The Handmaid's Tale or Brave New World.
Very cool.
I'm very happy with both options.
Me too.
So you can go and vote on our Instagram at Through the Pages Pod. Give us your vote and then we will be discussing the book of your choice.
And speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye, take care.